Some of them during the final conquest of the city. And one of them says, "We see the lights of Lachish, but we cannot see the lights of Azekah." And I mentioned a few minutes ago that Jeremiah speaks of the time when all the cities were taken by the Babylonians except Azekah and Lachish. And evidently, in those days, these cities largely built on high hills at that time, they would watch for the lights from the city to see whether the city was still continuing or had yet fallen to the Babylonians. Yes, Mr.?
What chapter is significant for Lachish?
Well, I had a note here, I thought, referring to the precise verse, but I don't see it. But it's very easy to be in a concordance. Look up Lachish. I believe there's only one reference to it in Jeremiah. Though there's more about the city in Isaiah because of the attacks of Sennacherib a century and a half earlier. But at this time, there's only the one reference here, which, as I say, I had the precise reference, but I don't see it. But it's easily gotten. But it's interesting that that refers both to Lachish and Azekah, which are the two that are mentioned in this particular particular scroll, in this particular letter. In this section then, which runs from 39, the middle of the chapter, through 45, or perhaps 44, because 45 goes back to tell of God's blessing to Barak and the promise, which continued all through this period. In this section, we have a very interesting story of what happened. It is the narrative is very interesting to as the events, and I'm just going to very briefly summarize them after the fall of Jerusalem. I mentioned at the end of the hour last time how it told us that Nebuchadnezzar had taken a personal interest in Jeremiah, and Jeremiah was told that he could come to Babylon if he wanted, where the captives were being taken, or he could go back to Jerusalem. Jerusalem was in exile. He could go back to the land of Judah, or he could stay with the governor who had been appointed, Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam. He could stay with him. Well, Jeremiah decided to stay in the land. And so we read then how Babylonians appointed this man, Gedaliah, as governor, and then some of the very loyal nationalistic Jews decided to kill him. After all, he was a quisling. He was serving as governor under the Babylonians who had destroyed their city. And they wanted to kill him, and Jeremiah warned them about it, that they should not do it, but they came anyway, and they attacked Gedaliah, who refused to believe such a thing would happen and did not use proper security precautions, and they killed him. And then we find a number of others who they killed at that time, and then they said, "We must flee into Egypt. We must flee from, because when the king of Babylon hears that we killed the governor he's appointed, he will want to kill us. We must flee down into Egypt." And it is a theme that runs through the book of Jeremiah, as it does a large part of Isaiah, that it is foolish to put confidence in Egypt to protect you from Assyria, in the case of Isaiah, from Babylon, in the case of Jeremiah. That the king of Egypt is interested only in his own objectives. He will not give you proper support, and he cannot now, because God has turned over the world for a time to Nebuchadnezzar and to Babylon. And so here we find that Jeremiah warned the people, and he said, "Do not flee to Egypt." He said, "If you flee to Egypt," he said, "God will not protect you there." He said, "Stay here in the land." And he said, "You will be able to live out your lives here." Well, they couldn't believe that, because they felt that the Babylonians would certainly punish the whole group of them for what had happened. But he said, stay here and God will protect you. Now the actual assassins had fled into the land of Ammon. So these were more or less innocent bystanders. But he warned them not to go to Egypt. But they picked up and went to Egypt and carried Jeremiah with them, took him with them to Egypt. And then we find in chapter 43 that Jeremiah told them in Egypt, he said, the danger you fear here will overtake you in Egypt. And we read in chapter 43, verse 8, that in Tapanhes, the place in Egypt where these Jews had settled, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, while the Jews are watching, take some large stones with you and bury them in clay in the brick pavement near the entrance to Pharaoh's palace in Tapanhes. Then say to them, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, said. I will send for my servant Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and I will set his throne over these stones I have buried here. He will come and attack Egypt, bringing death to those destined for death, captivity to those destined for captivity, the sword to those destined for the sword. And verse 12 ends, as a shepherd wraps his garment around him, so will he wrap Egypt around himself and depart from there unscathed. That's an interesting phrase. He will depart from there unscathed. Well, now if Jeremiah conquered Egypt and made it part of his kingdom, as he did Jerusalem, you would naturally expect that he would take it over and make it part of his kingdom and take people into exile as he did from Jerusalem. But to say he will depart from there unscathed suggests that he will conquer it. And as he told them, the evil you fear here will overtake you in Egypt. But that he will depart from there unscathed suggests that he won't be able to establish a continuing control there. And that's what actually happened. Nebuchadnezzar, years after this time, 20 years or so after this time, Nebuchadnezzar made an expedition against Egypt, and he overcame the Egyptian army and went through much of Egypt, pillaging and ruining various things, but did not have the force to hold and left it unscathed, but did not take it over. So in these few words, we show the accuracy of the predictions that God gave. How God told the prophet that he would, they would not gain anything by going to Egypt. Nebuchadnezzar would actually conquer Egypt, but he suggests that it will not be a continuing conquest. Now this section then, I think is a very interesting narrative section. There's very little in it beyond what I've said that needs time and thought to understand it. Ends with, in chapter 45, the promise given to Barak. And then verses 46 to 51 form a unit by themselves. We have similar units in Isaiah and in Ezekiel. It is a unit in which the prophet turns his attention away from the situation of his associates, the situation in Judah and in Israel. He turns his attention to the nations, the ungodly nations, which God has used as his instrument to punish his people, but which deserve no credit for having done so. They have not done it to do God's will. They have done it in order to achieve their own objectives. But they have done it with great cruelty, and God says they are going to be punished. And so in 46 to 51, we have a very different type of material. Chapter 46 is quite interesting because we know that it was given early in Jeremiah's ministry. You find in chapter 46, verse 2, this is the message against the army of Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, which was defeated at Carchemish on the Euphrates River by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah. And the chapter describes in very vivid way, the first half of the chapter does, the overthrow of the army of Egypt. This is the army, you know, which at the beginning of Jeremiah's ministry had killed Josiah. They had proceeded north to try to help the king of Assyria, but the Babylonians, who had revolted against Assyria, defeated them completely. This is within the next few years after Josiah's death. And this describes how pell-mell the Egyptians fled down through the coastal plain into Egypt. And you can imagine Jeremiah up there on the hill country of Judah, seeing the fleeing army and describing here how God was punishing the Egyptians, and then going on to tell how he would in later times, how Nebuchadnezzar would come against them. So in this section, we have the punishment against a number of the foreign countries given. There's much detail in it that would be interesting to look at, but it is a different sort of thing from what we've been having. And in a short course like this, there's hardly time to go into it at length. Perhaps just a second on the denunciation of Babylon with which it ends, in which God tells of the punishment to come on Babylon. And in verse 41, he says how Sheshach will be captured. The boast of the whole earth sees what a horror Babylon will be among the nations. Now this word Sheshach, S-H-E-S-H-A-C-H, S-H-E-S-H-A-C-H, corresponds to nothing that is known in ancient history. And it is here given in connection with fighting against Babylon, and it occurs once before in the book. In chapter 25, verse 26. And it is generally believed that it was a sort of a cryptogram for Babylon. Instead of taking the second letter of the alphabet, as in Babel, they took the next to the last, Sheen, the Sheshach. And that it is a cryptogram for Babylon put in so that if the Babylonians read it, they would not feel that here was a treasonable document. Now that is, this last part has many references to Babylon, so that could not apply there, except a reminiscence of its use once in that way earlier in the book of Jeremiah. This term Sheshach, to hide from the Babylonians this opposition to them. Yes? This is chapter 51, verse 41, which has the word Sheshach in, and it occurs once before in chapter 25, verse 26. Yes?
I'm a little bit curious as to why that word would be used in chapter 51 to hide the meaning from the Babylonians, when everywhere else in that chapter comes right out and says Babylon.
It is used in 25 to hide it. And then in 51, written later, when there was no longer need to hide, I think it's a reminiscence of its use earlier. There was no need to use it there. In fact, Babylon is used right in the same verse there. So I think that's a reminiscence of its use earlier. But it's generally considered to be that. Well, these would be very interesting to study the details of these denunciations of the nation, to see, as in verse 43 of chapter 51, specific predictions that have been fulfilled in later times. There aren't many of those, most of them, that were fulfilled in later times. We don't have evidence how they were fulfilled. But it would be very interesting, but it's quite different from what we've covered mostly in the course. So it is not unfortunate that we don't have time in this course to deal with that. I think one of the most interesting things in the book of Jeremiah is the life of Jeremiah. The fact that this man, who was called by God to be his spokesman, stood unflinchingly for God's message through such great difficulties, with almost the whole nation turned against him, with kings trying to kill him, with leaders of the country trying to kill him, with people considering him as a traitor, and yet giving God's message to them, presenting his word, taking great dangers upon himself. The few passages in the earlier part give us a glimpse of his mind, of his feelings, and we know how very deeply he felt being misunderstood this way, being thought that he was callous and that he did not love his own people. The book of Lamentations shows us how very deep was his love and sincere was his love for his people. But though he loved his people, he loved God more. And he stood for God's truth even when it resulted in his being misunderstood, in his being abused, in his being persecuted, and time after time it seemed as if he wouldn't live long. He saw others who gave the similar messages being killed, but God had promised in chapter 1 that he would make him like an iron fortress. He would make him like a bronze wall against his enemies. He would protect him, and God protected him through it all. And then you see him after the downfall of the city, you see him telling these people not to kill Gedaliah, telling him that God would punish them for it, and yet they do it, and then they want to go to Egypt, and you find him telling them, don't go, God will, you will be able to continue here, you will not be killed if you stay here, but if you run off to Egypt, the disaster you fear here will overtake you in Egypt. And yet, they not only run, but they take him with them. And so he's dragged off to Egypt with them, and there in Egypt he continues his prophesying, though he doubtless had more leisure and probably then wrote the book of Lamentations with its wonderful poetry, its clearly worked out arrangement so different from the rather haphazard thing that in the midst of all these vicissitudes was unavoidable in connection with the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah gives us many instances of God's wonderful prediction, instances of God's power, but I think one of the greatest things in the book is the picture of this man who stood true to God even when just about everything human seemed to be against him. And it's a wonderful thing to realize that though Jeremiah must have been detested by most of his people and was so thought of him, yet God raised up enough people who thought of Jeremiah as a true prophet and who highly regarded him, that they kept his writing, they preserved it against all the dangers, and they included it in the books that they passed on, which they understood was God's word to all subsequent ages. And we don't know what's ahead for us, and I think that it is good for us to be prepared. We don't know how much longer we'll have the freedom we possess to give out the word of God, but we can know that as God was with Jeremiah, he will be with all who stand true to him and who put his word ahead of everything. And so I think that's one of the great things from the book of Jeremiah, is the example that he gives us. And the assurance that even if we be like the prophet who Jehoiakim sent down to Egypt and got and brought back and killed, and we can't tell. God caused Stephen to be a wonderful witness to him even though he was stoned. But God protected Paul through all of the vicissitudes. We don't know what God's will is for any one of us. But we know that whatever it is, if we're true to him, his will and his purpose is best. And whatever happens, we'll be able in the end to look back and to see how he led in all of us. And I think Jeremiah is tremendously important for each of us for this reason. Now, if any one of you would like a copy of the questions that will be from which the exam questions will be selected, of course, you already have one list. But the list of other questions to go with that first list, I'll be glad to give it to you if you'll come up here now. Paul. Paul.
Yeah. spent about an hour and a half. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Yeah, I enjoyed that very much.
What did you do? Did you just write out what